Hello and welcome to the debug log number zero. That's an array-based joke. We'll cover that later. My name's Andrew Curry, and me and my friends decided to start a podcast dedicated to game development in Unity 3D. Now, we decided to do that for a few reasons. One is that we're game developers. We love playing games, we're passionate about games, but more importantly, we love making games. Number two is that we are professional Unity developers. We have like a wide array of jobs or skill sets, but we all use Unity on a day-to-day basis professionally. And number three, related to that, is last year a select few of us went to the Unite conference in Seattle. It's the big Unity conference they hold every year. And through that, we met a lot of fellow developers and speakers and kind of people that worked at Unity, and we discovered that not only could we learn so much from them, but we also had some information that was valuable to share as well. So, coming back from that conference, we decided that the best way to do that could be a podcast, could be a community, could be a website. Whatever it is, we're going to start with this podcast, and we hope you guys enjoy it. We're really looking for feedback from the community and involvement, and it's just getting started, so hope you enjoy the ride. This first episode is pretty much like the first day of school. We introduce ourselves, we talk about how each of us got into game development, and we talk about the things that we're excited about the podcast and just the site and community going forward. So without further ado, this is the Debug Log, episode zero.
Yeah, no, see? No. Talk Ryan.
This is my normal talking voice, this is what I'll be doing on the show.
Too much.
Yeah, I think I'm a little too reduced.
Don't reduce me.
Come on, man. Give me some words.
You're listening to the Debug Log, a podcast about Unity game development. My name's Andrew Curry.
I'm Obino Parra.
I'm Zach Schneider.
I'm Ryan Kilgore.
And this is episode zero?
Zero.
It's zero. It's programmers.
Like 0.9 or something like that.
don't tell them how many failures we've done.
No, this is the first one.
Well, it's not failures. They're revisions.
They're revisions.
Right. Iterative process.
We haven't done five test podcasts before. Yeah. This is the first one.
Are we counting remakes of the five before that, too?
Stop talking about it. That doesn't matter.
We'll get into versioning in another episode.
This is already getting...
It's already... Anyways, this show is about game development in Unity. We thought for the first episode that we'd just give a little bit of background about who we are and then go into just the first steps of getting started with Unity. So who wants to start? Let's go around the table.
All right, I guess I can start. Obino Parra, I've been... programming games for a very long time, ever since I was in late middle school. I started with the multi-user dungeons, MUDs, text-based games, and we're using like C and C++. And the crazy thing about that is I'm still kind of doing that. Not really game development, but I actually kind of fell into actually still playing those games. And even at work, so that's the crazy thing.
You just recorded that, too.
Hey, Michael, listen to this.
erase what I just said. Anyway, I've been doing game development for a while, and right now I'm working on a huge MMO with a bunch of guys. So I'm just, here to bring that perspective of game development as well as my, my professional years that I've had in game development to this podcast and, get to know the community at large as far as Unity developers go and share my experiences.
So. Yeah, before we go on, we have to stay at the beginning. We all work together. We all work in game development together, and that's why we were doing the podcast
with
together.
Unity.
Yeah, with Unity.
I was just holding up a sign on the freeway. I don't do it.
We'll podcast.
I'll go ahead and go. This is Andrew Curry. I got into game development by proxy of being a graphic designer. A graphic designer. I was like much more artsy kid growing up, where I am now, but I got an artsy background. I went to film school for a little bit, and then I did graphic design stuff, but then I started doing web design, which led into me doing programming and wanting to actually make stuff move and all that stuff. So once I started getting into programming, the game stuff started to become a lot of fun, and like all these guys, we found Unity, which is... I did a lot of other game stuff. I made like a XNA, that's like C#, XNA for Xbox Live, as a crappy little game that was fun to make. called Asteroids do concern me.
Yeah.
It was a Star Wars, Wars reference.
It was a great game. I don't know why you keep saying that.
It's not crappy. It's just simple. It's
really good.
But so I did that before, and then we started using Unity, and then we all just kind of... Then I found this place where we work, because it was one of the one jobs, actually. That was the main listing of Unity developer.
Yeah.
I guess I'll go next. I'm Zach Schneider. I'm relatively new to game design and to coding in general compared to these guys. I mean, they've been in it for years. I think I started 3 or 4 years ago now. And, I mean, that's including my school experience.
And already a boss.
Yeah, I mean, there can only be one thing, and that's perfect. I've only worked on it professionally for about a year now here at here where we work. And I feel like I've touched so many different aspects of the game engine. I've programmed for everything from iOS to Android to Mac to Windows. I've pretty much gone over... I'm not going to say I'm a professional in all those things, but I've at least have some experience in all that.
You don't want to brag. Right?
Yeah.
After the last two minutes. If I said it, I'd be bragging.
If I wanted to brag, I could.
What's our time at? Come on.
Yeah.
Do we have enough tape? Yeah.
All right. Oh, you're all done. All right. Awkward transition. But no, I'm Ryan Kilgore. I've been doing this for quite some time now. I actually first got into learning to program on an old Leading Edge series computer that you had to load DOS from the floppy. There was no hard drive on it. I'm not actually that old, though. I'm only 36. So, look like Gandalf.
You just had crappy computers.
Yeah. We're poor. So I've been programming for some time. Started off in mostly BASIC, then in high school got into Pascal, then in college C. Always knew I wanted to do games throughout the whole time there. College got a specialization in graphics programming. Actually, haven't been doing a lot of that, more just general gameplay stuff. But first job was at a company here in Georgia, Kneva, doing a social MMO. And was there for about 5 years, so I started messing with Unity at that time, kind of one of the side project type of things you get onto with a group of people. And just really kind of fell in love with it, you know. It was very easy to use, pretty intuitive once you kind of got to know the workflow of it. I was using that for a while, and then I made a jump to the Cartoon Network, and we used it for all our titles there. So Fusion of All Heroes and Adventure Time Battle Party. Doing a lot of client-side input programming as well as gameplay. And now I'm here with these guys at Virtually Better, doing some awesome stuff with interactive applications in the clinical space using Unity.
Look at him, shit. I think he's selling that thing.
Yeah.
He just crushed my stuff.
I know, right? List all his AA titles and stuff.
Like I said, I've been doing this for a while.
from the sounds of it, you guys all kind of knew what you wanted to do for...
that's what I was wondering. You knew you wanted to do games from the beginning when you first started programming.
That was a huge driving force for me to even learn it. It's like, you know, what it came back to is I remember, especially for PC games, this is when I brought home the Doom shareware, and I was like, holy shit, you can actually do this on a computer.
Right.
How do you do this on a computer? I need to find that out.
Well, see, I got into computer stuff real late, but that was the thing that kind of kept me from games, because it's like, oh, you can do that. I think it was an XNA got announced, because one of my friends who was like a big gamer, but he wasn't a programmer, but he's like, you could do all these things. They have templates to make a racing. I was like, no way. I was like, it just felt like that was something that other people did. And you're like, there's no way I can even make that. But then you start getting into it.
The sheer intimidation factor of game design. I think that's what kept me from the field, from just programming in general. I didn't think I could do it. And I mean, my brother actually was the one who talked me into going into game design. He's like, hey, no, you'll love it. And I took one class and I was hooked.
But you didn't do any programming before that, did you?
None whatsoever, yeah.
So I was on, as for me, I was on MSN Gaming Zone when I was a little kid on AOL. And you had the MSN
game.
And they had all those games on there. One of them was like this text-based game. And I started playing it, and you know, naturally I'm like, oh, it's just text. It wasn't love at first sight.
Slay Dragon, get
her. You guys troll me about that. Everyone has their vices. Anyway, so I was on that and just browsing. I was like, oh, these are some cool games. And, you know, never would have thought. Like, when I started, I was like, instead of, like, being fearful of it, I was like, heck, I want to make this. So that was, like, one of the things that really inspired me to want to make games is I started playing it. And I was like, I think I can do this. And then I just started researching it and asked a couple of the developers that actually worked on the game. then, and I got in, networked with them, and then started to actually learn C and then C++, and started developing.
I guess that helps because it's like text, and you just didn't get intimidated by that. It's like
actually, exactly. The graphics probably would have scared the heck out of me.
I think that's what it scared me, because conceptually you just don't understand like rendering and
That's like, just a lot of stuff.
Right.
Yeah. You know, audio rendering, some networking, it's just a whole stack.
Just
of
the whole
crap,
like game loop and all that stuff. Yeah. How that actually even works. Right. Like, I don't.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and that's one really cool thing about Unity is the fact that you know you go from like early days, like, oh, here's just these, like, you know, here's a C++ project or even a C project. And then you go from that, just straight code and writing your own tools and pipeline, to having something that makes it so easy to get started.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like you can actually attach scripts to objects and visualize it. And you know, you don't have all the ramp up time with the tools. So,
yeah, and it's also the most versatile one I've used, like Game Engine, from the standpoint of like there's stuff like Unreal, which is actually done a lot better recently. It's pretty slick. And there's other engines, but Unity's, you can do anything like in Unreal. You can make a platform, but it still feels like it's their system. Like Unity is like, no, you just code in C# or Unity script or whatever you want to do. And they kind of don't kind of give you the template as much as Unreal does at the beginning, but I think that's better for, especially if you're getting into programming.
Yeah.
Because they abstract just enough. I mean, because you don't even have to worry about loops. And so you can dig into getting into the game loop and the render loop, but you kind of don't have to worry about that at first, you know?
Yeah.
Which is helpful.
Another thing was, like, just the accessibility of Unity. Like, prior to, you know, Unreal releasing their latest version, Unity was, like, the one that was free. You know, they had a personal version that was all free. And you could
there's
do pretty
a big
much
time they had it for a while.
Anything,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
But all the other game engines, like, you know, I guess Hero Engine and Unreal for a time were like so expensive and so inaccessible to the lay developer or the indie developer. So just the fact that they were so accessible and so easy to use with their assets and stuff like that, that was like another key component as to why I feel like a lot of people have adopted it since, you know, they first came out with their original version.
Well, heck, they pushed the big guys into actually releasing the free model. I mean, so that's a pretty bold or impressive statement by them. So.
But, yeah, I mean, also, now they're all free. That's why. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
Another factor of that, of it being free, is that's why they use Unity to teach game design in schools, because these schools couldn't afford, you know, the 50 copies of Unreal that we needed to you know, to make the games and do the coursework. So they just went and got Unity, and we could use the free version at home and the, you know, the 30 plus copies we had at school.
Right.
So we weren't limited to working just in the classroom. We could take it home with us.
Okay, and it dovetails right into actually having some computer background or even just getting to programming some, because I think I haven't messed directly, but I think at a school project one time I had a game design class, a couple electives in my computer science like courses, but they made like, oh, you can use Game Maker.
Yeah.
And we had one of our fellow other friends, Brent, him, they are in charge. I just did the art for that project. Like, I'm not touching Game Maker in this thing, because it's just, I mean, it's just like they're trying to make stuff easier, but they have to have their own scripting language and their own little weird system and stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's not just like, it's just C# script. And I actually like rewrote that game like Flash like over a weekend. I was like, I'll just make a version of this, because I'm not, because it's just like, it's how much you're holding the hand, but I think it's at a perfect medium, because you can still, it gives you, It could be a little hard if you have no programming experience and you don't know how to get started. And hopefully we can start helping that, giving out resources and stuff. But it's powerful enough to dig right into the engine, into the source code, even if you have, you know, that license.
Yeah.
Do they have the new one? They switched to Unity 5 and everything's free. I remember Pro, one of the things that used to be you get the source code, like the C++ source code for the engine. Is that still
For Unity?
Yeah.
No. I think that's an additional cost.
But that's the Pro.
That's
now.
The Pro. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Pro and then additional cost for the actual source code. But speaking like outside of features from Unity, I was like, and we were talking about like how you would get started. Like, what other things, like, you know, besides like the features of Unity, which I don't think we even mentioned how it ports to so many different platforms. This was like its main, like one of its main points about the engine is just how it can develop or deploy a project on mobile or
with minimum amount of change.
Exactly.
Well, that's why you keep going back to the things that we talk about, because we talk about all the engines now. But on a timeline, it's all relative, because if you look back 4 or 5 years ago when we first started getting into Unity or messing with it, it was the only thing that was free. It was the only thing that did multiple platforms. That's why I got into it, because like, oh, I can make a PC and an iOS and an Android game and a web game, because Unreal didn't do that then. They all do that now. That's like
that.
A thing, but...
Yeah. Yeah, they've really set the stage, I guess, for game developers and game engines. So,
yeah, I mentioned before that I've since I've started working here that I've touched so many different platforms, and that's solely because of Unity and its ability to export to so many different platforms. So I don't think I would have gotten the amount of experience that I've gotten in this year with any other engine.
No other engine. Buy no Unity. Yeah. Use our affiliate code, unity3.com/debug. No, we don't have that set up yet. We might do that in the
Not
future.
That Unity's paying me.
Well.
But they're welcome to.
Yeah, they're welcome. We're selling them for free right now.
Yeah, okay.
But that's a good Obina mentioned that that's kind of the other topic to shift into. It's like, we always had the question we've done in our test podcast that we mentioned. It's like the question of like, I've downloaded Unity, now what?
Yeah.
Like, because some people download stuff, and even people I've recommended to, they get excited and they open it up and it's just this blank, you know, 3D like plane. I don't know what to do.
Stuff?
Yeah. So what would you guys like recommend to somebody just getting into it?
I'd recommend just, you know, finding a simple project, you know, something that just isn't too daunting, you know. Don't start with the MMO. Like, you know, that's just way too much stuff. From text to MMOs. No, you got to experience it here, but that makes sense to do that. But, you know, just find something like Pong or Space Invaders or something you find remotely interesting and try to work on it.
Like clone some games.
Clone something and just find something that's easy and, you know,
don't sell it.
Yeah, you're not. Yeah, don't throw that up in the
unless
store.
You change it enough, like Crossy Road or something.
Yeah.
Frogger.
But, right. Yeah. You gotta significantly change it, but yeah, and maybe even find just a tutorial project that's kind of up your alley, and then you can just try to adjust it later. So, yeah, that's what I'd recommend anyway.
I'd say set clear goals for yourself. So don't just go in there feeling like you have to do this whole huge game, but, you know, make milestones for yourself. So, like, today I'm going to tackle a first-person controller, or today I'm going to tackle, you know, populating my environment. By giving yourself those goals, you reach them, and you get that sense of satisfaction, like you're actually making progress on the game.
Set a safe word.
Yeah.
Set a safe word for your game.
Yeah.
Game
right.
Making.
Bananas.
Yeah. If it gets too intense for you. Yeah.
Also, I would recommend possibly downloading some of the Unity tutorials. There's so many of them out there now,
Well, the cool thing about it is now, yeah, they've started doing. They didn't even when we talked about this 5 years ago. They didn't have any tutorials at all, but now they've really gotten on that. They have like explanations of each part of the engine, but they also have cool little just projects that are like from.
Right.
And that's like you said. That's the biggest thing. It's like from start to finish. It's hard to like go, I'm going to learn the abstract basics of this language and how this engine works.
Right.
Because sometimes I've fallen off tutorials where it's like, you know, it's like, this is the interface. And I'm like, oh, boring. You know, they don't show you what game you're making first.
Yeah.
It's like, but if you have something to make and it's fun, you can show people. Or like, a lot of times the tutorials are like, hey, we've open sourced these assets or whatever. Use this and modify it and make something else. That
right,
can be
right.
fun. Because that's how you can kind of start getting into just game design and think about that. Because most games are modifications of some other game or the combinations or whatever, but that helps you get into that just programming-wise.
Yeah, and speaking about game design, getting into game design, I feel like another aspect, you know, getting started is to, you know, when you find that game idea that you want to get into, but usually you're kind of drawn to jumping in into code and starting to plug away at the game. I would actually, like, take a step back and you know, take an hour or two and just map out what that game needs. And, like, you know, outside of code, like, whether you're coming from a programming background or an artist background or a sound designer background.
It's easy for you to say.
Yeah. Stucker and Stucker Bash. Anyway, yeah, just get some paper and just map out what that game needs. Does it need a first-person controller? Does it need to be, like, a platform and scroll left or right? Or, you know, does it need some kind of data storage or any of that? And just, like, map that out for just an hour or two. I wouldn't spend too much time on it.
Like paper prototyping.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, just kind of planning out your
right.
system.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Exactly. And that'll give you a better idea, like, how games work and what the components it needs, and gives you a better idea of what you need to do and what you need to learn. It
gives you a better image of the scope of your game as well.
Exactly.
But don't be afraid that you might miss something, because usually when you're working on it, it'll rear its head. You know, it'll be like, oh, crap, I do need external storage
right.
somehow, because it'll show you at some point.
And I've never made a game or have heard of a project that didn't miss something in the first, even in the game design. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised.
And that's the thing. It's always like a fine line to walk between like no planning and just jumping in, and which we do usually sometimes just
this podcast.
And just but like. But actually where you go, I'm just going to start messing around. And sometimes that's fun if you're just tinkering around, but then you're like, oh, I need to make a project. Hold on, I need to stop and actually put some structure.
I need to organize,
But the problem is you also don't want to have too much structure, because game stuff is different than, I always say this all the time from like web stuff. It's like if you have a website you want to make, you kind of need to know all the content and then map it out and say, we're going to design for that content and this. And you design it to expand and stuff, but it's like a defined, you know, thing.
Game design is definitely fluid. I mean, because
it has to keep flowing.
Exactly.
You never know.
At the end of the day, you want a fun game. So if you start designing it and you're like, oh, that's not fun, you have to like take a step back and redesign.
And
that's
always the thing,
yeah.
A lot.
Because it has to be an iterative process because like the project management stuff is like, you can get everything down and everything done on time, but he's like, this sucks now. Mm. It's not actually fun.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to ditch things you thought were great or, revise the plan.
We're not saying this to deter you at all. I mean, by all means, go in there and make a game, but just...
It's about finding the right balance
for you.
Yeah, it's not deterrent. It's actually encouragement. Like, don't be afraid of change. Don't be afraid of something failing the first time. You know, it's going to happen. It happens to everyone.
It's one of the hardest things for me as a programmer is to hear other people criticize my work. And that's something I worked so hard on. But yet, they're making absolutely valid comments.
But your work does suck. You should. Yeah.
You fail so
it's like,
so
it's
so
like
easily.
It maybe it means
so
something.
Hard.
You keep failing all the time. But that's true. Like that's always the thing. Like fail early and often. Like you want to when you're making projects and you want to get it into that whatever format or sandbox. You want to keep iterating and iterating on an idea and give it to people. If it's like because if you like say you have a simple game for like I want to make the next snake game or something, if you can get it to an idea that's kind of just a prototype as fast as possible, just a simple programmer art or whatever you want to do, and start testing it or give it to people, like that's because it's all about iterations. That's what game development is. Like you're going to remake it or scratch what you have. Like, all right, I do that. I'm infamous for doing this with some projects. So you go, all right, after you spend like weeks doing something, it's like, oh, I know how to make this better. I'm just going to throw this away and I'm going to spend 2 days just remaking the entire thing.
Oh, yeah, I do that with code on the back end sometimes.
Right.
It doesn't even affect the overall game, but you may not even see a difference. Like, ugh, that's ugly. Get rid of it.
That refactoring.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of like quick prototyping, I think another thing that we haven't really touched on is just the breadth of the asset store that Unity offers and just all the plugins and
explain what that is actually for people.
So the asset store is like a repository of so many items, whether it's models, 3D models, it's utility scripts for like saving data or a first person controller like you mentioned, and interfacing with different tools. There's just so many. There's a wide range. There's one thing that we saw recently, Kronos, I think, was the like a time elapse there, whatever tool
like,
or whatever.
Yeah, it allows you to adjust sort of your
game time.
Yeah,
your physics
like,
time.
Basically, it's like a slow mo or speed up.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, there's just so many tools and that handle
cool tools.
Cool tools. There's so many cool tools on the asset store.
That was dated.
Yeah.
Now that's going to be our segment. This is the first episode we're exploring this, but we'll start exploring the cool tools. Whenever we find
it. Not gonna lie, I had cool tools when I was younger.
You still have cool tools.
Yeah. And the way that asset store works, for example, like if people sit on there, like if you want to, you open up Unity, have a new project, and you say, I want a model of a robot. They might have free robots in there. They might have like ones you pay for and you pull it in. Yeah, so you don't have to be a 3D modeler.
Right.
So the fact is, you can kind of piece together even just a prototype. And that's exactly like a school project,
the,
right?
The first game I ever made was a compilation, sorry.
I have to say.
Yeah.
Some fancy speaker there.
Compilation. I know my words, okay? Yeah.
You talk pretty.
Yeah. It was a compilation of a whole bunch of different assets I got from the asset store for free. And that was kind of like Frankenstein with another tutorial that I got from Unity that actually didn't even offer publicly anymore. I had gone in and found it on the website. They didn't have like a link to it or anything. But
what was that? Are they hiding it? Should you not have had
it? I guess they wanted.
Did you steal this content?
I guess they wanted to put out a new tutorial, so this was an older one.
Right, yeah. No,
I had found it, and it was exactly what kind of game I wanted to make, so by using all those assets and using
copying
the tutorial.
And pasting all the assets.
I mean, hey, copy and pasting is a big part of programming, mm-hmm. but
sort of. Yeah.
I was able to modify it and actually learn how it was working, but yeah. All of that came from the asset store and from assets that were pre-generated.
Yeah.
Wow. Wake up. Okay. Well, yeah. Just one quick thing is that, and this is really as easy as within the editor, you can go to the window menu item and drop down to asset store. It basically brings up a little in-app browser and just like there's a search location there, and you just type in like, yeah, I need robots or whatever, or just robots. And yeah, it'll go off and find all the related.
I want robots.
Yes, last time I did me a game.
Find me a mate.
Yeah. Oh, this is Tinder. I see.
Yeah,
Tinker.
Speaking of Tinder.
No. Speaking of the asset store. Another thing to add about that is, you know, this is not just for, this podcast is not just for the programmers in the world it's also for like artists and stuff like that. So another thing that you can utilize if you were just an artist and you wanted and you love game development, but you maybe just don't want to make a full game by yourself, you could just submit art assets to the asset store and you could actually make money off of that. So that's right. Another, you know, advantage of the asset store is that if you're an artist or if you're a sound designer and you want to contribute sounds or models or something, you can just throw that on the asset store. There's a process you have to go through, of course, but for like Unity approval, but you can do that as just another avenue to explore.
And also for the people that aren't programmers, that's like asset source kind of like allows you to, if you're not one thing, you can get assets from another field.
Exactly.
So yeah. They even have like visual scripting things. So they have stuff in the asset store that you can get that you don't even have to program. They have like Playmakers
sort of like the blueprint system.
Yeah, in Unreal. Like it's like a, and just to have a scene that's set up like, oh, here's like a cutscene maker and it's almost just like a timeline editor. They have stuff where you can make a game in Unity and not have to program at all. Because they have all, I mean, it depends, you know, your flexibility and your extensibility is going to change. But,
you know, it's a good place to start.
Yeah, but if you're just playing around with it, if it's really intimidating, if coding is intimidating, usually I just want to kind of play around with blocks and move and animate. And you can do a lot of that stuff without coding. I mean, yeah. Asset Store. Related to that, one more thing is the actual resources, because that's the thing now. It's like there's so many people out there doing this right now, even compared to how many. But the internet's great because there's sites called Unity Answers, which is almost a Unity version of Stack Overflow, which is another thing. They're like programmer, like kind of message board, like answer question answer sites, and they're amazing because you have any problem. Somebody else, like 100 other people, might maybe only 2 sometimes, but rarely do you have a problem nowadays. Like just in the past couple of years, that if you copy it on there or ask people that they don't know what it is or they can't help you with it.
Yeah,
and that used to. And the, I mean, sometimes I mean, even just a few 4 or 5 years ago, you'd hit some problems like nobody's had this problem,
yeah,
and they're not posting this anywhere. Yeah. But now that's so ubiquitous, and people post, so it's like an online. That's just for programming only, but. It's a big community where you can just ask and get help if you get stuck places.
Yeah. So yeah, that should be like your first line of defense. And I guess outside of that, we're also available. I think we can extend ourselves to being like a support. Like if you had a question or you know a comment about Unity, just shoot it our way and we'll see if it interests us. And then we'll
If you're worthy.
If you're worthy for our answer.
Also send $5.
That too. Yeah, some of that stuff we might start doing in the show because now we're just exploring. Again, we've done like 6 or 7 test podcasts, still exploring the format. We added Ryan on at some point in there.
Yeah,
so, like,
here in the original.
Yeah. So he just walked in.
Yeah,
in.
Like, what are you guys doing?
Talking
with lunch. Let's do this.
But, so like we want to do stuff like tutorials or even do stuff where like we just talk about a question or like a listener question or
coding competitions.
Yeah, coding competitions. Wow. I guess. But
delete there.
Throw down the gauntlet.
Yeah, kidding, man.
So really, kind of build a community and like not even just us give because we're not experts by any means. We have varied experience in different areas.
Yeah.
But we'll give our opinions. But what we'd like to do is like even shoot those questions back out. So people ask us questions and we'll kind of put that in a community and we'll kind of read. Answers other people in the community give to those questions, you know, kind of like just everybody try to help out.
Yeah.
So we're going to Google search for them.
Yeah. But that's the thing, is like, we're not by any means some kind of experts in this stuff, but we've had experiences and we use Unity every day, and that's why, I mean, not long story short, we wanted to start the podcast because we went to Unite last year, and we went into it thinking that we were like, oh, we don't have these big, you know, AAA games, or we don't have our own, like, you know, game in the App Store, whatever it is. But then after they're being there talking to people, we realized some people were there just really just getting into it for the first time, or even have companies that are successful game developers, like, oh, we're just trying to test out Unity. But through all those conversations, we realized, like, wait a second, we are like professional Unity developers. Yeah. Even though you don't feel like that all the time. Yeah, but every day we're messing with stuff and like learning like stuff with these like mobile like headset SDKs like Zach messes with, the video stuff to, you know, data storage, all these other things, HIPAA compliance stuff that most people, that's there's a small percentage of people. We'll get into that later. If you don't know what that is, don't worry about that.
We'll put you to sleep later.
But so, and that's why we want to do it. So we thought we had at least some experience to share, and then actually just kind of build out a community of people that have fun making games. So.
Yeah. Very nice. Very nice.
Before we go, we need to do.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Unity Game of the Week.
Game of the Week. I like how you started it.
Yeah. Game of the Week.
It's still. I'm going to put it in after this. Don't worry.
We'll fix it in post.
What's our Game of the Week?
Our Game of the Week was Besieged.
Besieged,
Zach can talk about that because he's been playing it.
Besieged or Besiege?
Don't you say it.
Because he's been playing it every day at work.
I have no
take
idea
that, Michael.
What I'm
talking about. Second time he's done that.
It's a game obviously made in Unity. Was it real time building siege engines?
Yeah, it's kind of like a little problem solving. It's like it almost like those old Banjo Kazooie things where you build like a vehicle. It's like a physics simulation thing where it's like a
with a goal. Yeah,
it's like medieval times and gives you a little goal. And it's like destroy this castle or destroy this airship or something, and you have kind of a block based system and you can make the ultimate death machine.
Yeah, you got like small components like wheels that turn, you know, tension wires for, you know, catapults,
springs,
and, like that.
And rotating wheels.
Right.
I mean, it's just a lot of fun to see what you can create.
Yeah.
And really shows how versatile Unity is.
Just a fun sandbox.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a great sandbox. And the art direction on that was amazing. So.
Absolutely.
So, interface is good, too.
It's slick, it's really slick.
And it's still like, is it alpha or is it beta? I mean,
it's
definitely
alpha.
It's
beta.
I think, yeah.
I guess that's considered beta on Steam, I guess. Yeah.
It's on,
And for something that's beta or pre-release, it's incredibly, I'm not going to say complete, but it has a lot of the features almost to the point where you can definitely see it's going to be a fun game.
I feel like the features are there.
Absolutely.
Feels like they're adding content and trying to get bugs. Because it's still like, because it's like an anything goes kind of physics simulation, it does hitch ups at times, and it's still like kind of they're working on getting it.
At the mercy of the solvers.
Yeah. But I mean, they're pushing that Unity to like the limits of what I've seen as far as just like full real time like simulation of crazy, crazy physics and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe that's why the world is so small in that.
Yeah,
each,
it has to be
scene
very
is
limited.
Like really small because everything has like all the intense physics on it. So.
Because every block is like, there's not batched together.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
in fact, I've built machines that have slowed down. I mean, I have a pretty nice computer at work, and it has had some issues rendering some of my.
So you do play it at work.
Only afterwards.
She is great for goofing off.
Go up to the mic and say that one more time. State your name and then say, "This is Zach Siders talking."
Yeah. Like, my name's Ryan.
That's cool. Yeah, so I think it's like $7 on Steam.
Like, it's
the crazy low
cheap
price. Yeah, I pay more for iPad apps. You know,
that's
so
true. Yeah, for games I've already played too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, until next time, you can reach us at our website, which we're beginning to, I guess, populate. It's thedebuglog.com. We have a Facebook page, which we're beginning to populate. It's facebook.com/thedebuglog. And you can reach out to us, like Obina said, and give us feedback or questions at thedebuglog@gmail.com. It's good. I think it was a good episode.
It was a great episode.
Yeah, I had fun.
I agree.
Now let's hold hands.
Yeah.
And I'll do the closing song.
Well, first and last.
All right. Well, anyways, until next time, my name's Andrew.
I'm Obina.
I'm Zach.
I'm Ryan.
We'll see you later.
All right, ready?
And do you want to do the clap thing again?
No, it's at the beginning. We haven't stopped recording.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if we were cut the bullshit at the beginning.
I will.
Okay.
I always cut the bullshit.
Yeah. You shuttle it.
You're listening to the Debug Log, a show podcast. I don't like saying show.
Podcast?
Yeah, I'm going to say podcast.
It's a podcast.
All right. So what are we doing?